All right. Oh, geez, another day, another dollar, another week, another podcast. We're back. Well, let's get ready to do this. Okay. We'll leave this in just because it always makes it seem so much more edgy. No, edgy isn't the word. It makes it seem so much more like real and authentic that I don't leave this unedited part in. I leave this sort of extraneous thing in that gives you a glimpse behind the scenes of what's going on. Okay. All right. Welcome back. It's episode 3. It's AGP. Did I get that right? AGP, Average Gods Podcast. That's right. AGP Podcast. We're back. Episode 3, February 26, 2017. I don't know what this episode's about right off the bat. I record these in different parts. I have a couple of ideas what the body's going to be about. But the intro is usually just a recap, and that's where we're going to do it. It's been a hell of a week. I think it has. That's going to be my new catchphrase. It's been a hell of a week, even if I've done nothing of substantial or anything of import during the week. I have taken the advice of the overwhelming one person who's listened to my podcast. Thank you, Rebecca, if you are listening, and improved my audio. I have gotten a better mic. I'm using a Samsung Meteor, which is the mic I've had for a while. I was looking at a bunch of different ones, but I think I'm gonna keep with this one for a while, unless I need to get when I do interviews, which I'm a little bit worried about because I'll have to fork out more money to buy a second good mic. But anyway, when that comes up, that'll come up. Needless to say, I hope the audio sounds better. When I was testing before this, it sounded better. It sounded insanely better. And even as I'm looking now, as I'm recording this, listen to this meta commentary right now. And as I'm watching the levels, it can tell that the levels are not nearly as peak and valley as they used to be. They're right exactly where I need to be. So the quality should be smoother. I also have a pop filter now, which should eliminate most of the sort of extraneous material that comes in. That's the extra S's, the extra P's, the extra D sounds. I'm learning also to pull them a little bit, you know, after there's this weird thing where you have to have a certain diction when you do audio. And it's interesting because it's simply things that you think, well, it's 2017. We should be able to fix all these things just by through the glory of technology of what it is. Unfortunately, we really can't. I have a plugin now that will take all my S's down. I think the thing is that any good condenser mic should eliminate the extra S's, right? Even that shouldn't be as cringy or as poignantly ear-piercing as it used to be. So for anybody who was listening to my wrestling podcast, the one before, thanks for dealing with that. My quality from now on, I guarantee you, will be better. Nonetheless, I've had my coffee. I'm not a big coffee drinker. I am a horrible coffee drinker. I am someone who dilutes my coffee probably more than your average American River at this point. I get usually a classic blend or a breakfast blend. I am not sure what the difference is. I cannot taste the difference because I put in usually 3 to 4 flavored creamers, not just pure cream, flavored creamers of the most, let's just say, wimpy things ever, from white chocolate, macadamia nut, to hazelnut, to whatever it might be, and I dilute it like it is some kind of bad scientific experiment. And then I put in 3-4 sugars, so I'm hopped up. I don't do any sort of energy drinks, and I don't really believe in them, or any even sort of pre-workout, despite my interest in fitness. With that being said, I've had my coffee. I got it for free as well. If you're in the PA area, or you're in any area that has a Sheetz, you can go there at least for the limited amount of time. And I'm not sponsored by Sheetz. Boy, the hell, I wish I was. But you can go there for a certain amount of time and get free coffee. If you're someone from New Jersey, because I have a lot of people that I know in New Jersey, and you don't know what a Sheetz is, I'm really sorry that you've been brainwashed by the evil corporation, tyrannical imperialist seat that is Wawa. Have fun with your Wawa. Unfortunately, you'll never know the pure glory that is a Sheetz, and I think certain people might find offense to that, and that's completely okay. Anyway, I've had my coffee. I was talking about, when do I usually drink coffee? Number one, it's before this podcast, but it's also every now and then when I'm driving, doing a lot of different drives back and forth between here, being Pennsylvania, Northeast PA, and Eastern New Jersey. And usually when I go drive back and forth, I just did it on Friday. I'm recording this on a Sunday. When I'm driving back and forth, I might have a coffee just to make sure that I don't park myself up a tree. I get killed by some horrific excuse of a poor driver that is New York drivers, or I simply just, I aren't paying attention and some son of a gun in front of me puts on his brakes for no reason because some squirrel ran out in front of him. With that being said, driving back and forth from New Jersey to PA has certainly taught me a lot. I've done it usually about close to 40 times now for my education between my MA program and my home. And all I can say is that I've certainly learned a lot. I was thinking recently about what went on. There was one of my friends on Snapchat sent a Snapchat where she was in a parking garage and a PA driver had taken up, I guess you would call it like two spots. I don't think it was as bad as she was, making it out. I think she was carrying on a little bit between us. Oh, and anybody else who's listening, and if Diana's listening, I'm looking at you, Diana. So she puts out this Snapchat and she goes, look at this like bad PA driver. And number one, right off the bat, I have no affiliation to Pennsylvania except that I was born and raised here. So beyond that, I at the same time felt a tremendous amount of pride to also defend my state, because as much as it is my state and as much as I don't want it to be my state, I'm definitely looking forward to becoming a New Jerseyan and all of the horrific parts that might come with, because everybody thinks everybody in New Jersey is like a dirty, younger, autistic brother of New Yorkers, right? But with that being said, I'm looking forward to becoming a New Jerseyan because I won't lie, Pennsylvania drivers aren't that good, right? But even when Diana sent that Snapchat, I felt a tremendous amount of pride to be like, hey, absolutely not. Pennsylvania drivers that is not reflective. This dumb son of a gun who thought that his car is important enough for two spots. It wasn't. It was just some Honda. You know, maybe if it was a BMW, I would have let him go because, I mean, it's a Mercedes, right? You know, if you drive a Mercedes, you're pretty much better than most people. Just saying. Or BMW. Even Volvo. I think Volvo really is a sleeper pick when it comes to a lot of cars. Like, you think most people who try to be upper class will go for Mercedes and BMWs, but Volvo's the sleeper pick. Volvo, if you almost want to think of it like the guy who plays in the NBA and makes a lot of money drives the Mercedes, and the person who signs that player's checks drives a Volvo. It's just my opinion, just my two cents. Anyway, from what I saw, it wasn't that bad of a park job. It was rough, but it wasn't ostentatious. Well, never mind. Maybe I'm just defending here. I respond back. I try to defend myself. We reached some sort of agreement, whatever. But it made me think about the difference between the drivers. And I can definitely say I've seen a massive difference. Number one, from driving in the main states, I can't go and make any accusations about any other drivers beyond New York, New Jersey, and PA drivers. Anybody else is completely up. I've seen tons of Florida drivers, oddly, and I have no idea why. It could be because maybe there's a lot of old people who live in Florida and then have homes in the Poconos because they want to get in touch with nature and they want to get in touch with that bucolic sense of freedom as opposed to their pink flamingo covered lawns down in Fort Lauderdale or some bull crap like that. But nonetheless, New York drivers, I can say without a shadow of a doubt, are horrific. And not in a way that they're not bad drivers, in a way that they are completely, I guess my word would be, clueless that they are not the only person on the road. I have seen New York drivers stay in the left lane on Interstate 80 for so long that I'm pretty sure biblical verses have been written about them, because that's how long this has been going on, right? Somewhere in the Old Testament, there is a book of New York drivers, because they stay in that left lane and they just are completely clueless and oblivious to anybody else there. Admittedly, they're also very reckless. They're very, 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 very just, I would almost just say dangerous in a sense. They don't really give two craps about who they're cutting off, where they're going. They just do what they want. And if you are, actually, you know what? I would say, and if you're underweight, no, just you don't exist. If you're next to a New York driver, get the hell away, because you might as well be in Superwoman? That makes sense? Yeah. Wonder Woman. There we go. Wonder Woman. Superwoman. Wonder Woman's invisible car at that point, or jet, whatever it was. I don't like superhero stuff. But you might as well be in an invisible car, because there's no way they're going to even care about you. There's no way they're going to acknowledge you. You might as well not exist to them. New Jersey drivers, on the other hand, are very determined. They're very focused. And if you just get out of their way, you'll be fine. They drive with a purpose. New Jersey drivers have incredible, I would just say drive. Wow, that's a great word, drive when they're driving. When they have incredible drive when they're driving, because they just simply seem to have a place where they're going. They know where they need to go. They're going it, and they're just get out their way. And I respect that, because once you learn that, once you acknowledge that, because when I was coming on 80 and I would get to like the Troy Hill, Parsippany area, which is around exit 30 going east, and so like 30 to 40 and around there, I mean, obviously it picks up. You have higher volume. You have people going faster. But nonetheless, you can figure a lot of that stuff out, because New Jersey drivers are predictable in a sense. And that's good. We should all be predictable when we drive, right? You don't want to be next to a tractor trailer and think, that guy who's driving that 50-ton wrecking ball pretty much on wheels that can be controlled with literally a pinky on a round steering wheel that could end my life quicker than most knife stabbings, that thing, that machine could run me off the road and end my life that quickly. To think that there is not some rules in our mind, some guidelines that those drivers are following, those guidelines of, you know, that we take for granted, like you shouldn't run people off the road, or you shouldn't cut people off, or you shouldn't be reckless, or you shouldn't tailgate, things like that. Those are the things, those guidelines are the ones that we take for granted. New Jersey drivers follow them. It's just that New Jersey drivers also have places to go. They are fearless. And with that being said, they're good fearless. New York drivers are the ones that are just reckless, and they don't care. New York drivers, if every New York driver had a factory in their backyard that produced, you know, care, they produced care packages, they still wouldn't care. They still wouldn't. They just can't. It's not in their DNA. If there were clinics all over New York where you could get free care injections just to make sure that all your care levels are up, New York drivers still wouldn't get those injections, because they just don't care. They just don't. With that being said, I'm not going to defend PA drivers, but I will make a comment about PA drivers in the sense that PA drivers are pretty terrible. They're really bad. I would say that New Jersey drivers are definitely coming out top one. PA drivers, you know, we're really just a bunch of dumb people in Pennsylvania. We're really just a bunch of simple folk compared to all the New Jerseyans who have sort of seen the world and exposed to a lot of things. We tend to take our time. We're a little bit more daydreamy. We're a little bit more looking out. We're a little bit more, ooh, look at the pretty animals. Or did you see a deer over there, Johnny? And stuff like that, to be honest. It's not the best way to drive. And, you know, you'll see a lot of things. I've seen a lot of very funny anecdotes for, like, New Jersey drivers. They're so dedicated. They're in their way. You look over as you're next to a New Jersey drivers, and they're just focused. They're just watching. They're looking straight ahead. And then you get the PA, and all of a sudden, people are eating, and people are drinking, and people are have movies playing, and people are watching their phones, and people are painting, and people are doing their toenails, and people are doing a whole bunch of other things besides focusing. So PA drivers in some way simply don't take driving that seriously, which is not necessarily a good thing, considering that you're probably the highest in the highest amount of danger when you're operating a vehicle. I mean, I think it's statistically sort of proven that you have a much higher chance of dying while while driving a car versus dying in a plane crash or dying on a train or drowning on a boat's collapses or something like that. It's pretty crazy to think that we don't take it that seriously, but we don't. I think it's just because we're just a simpler way. It's a different lifestyle. And overall, PA drivers, maybe Diana's on to something. You know what? Maybe Diana's true. I don't want to take that white Honda driving PA driver as a part representing the whole, but we're not really that good. I won't lie, at least from what I've seen. It doesn't really get any better when you get towards Allentown and stuff like that. I can only speak about Northeast PA, but Allentown's not much better. Philadelphia drivers are a little bit better, but Philadelphia drivers are just horrific. They're just, oh god, I feel winded here just thinking about them, just because I'm not sure exactly what was wrong with them, but there's something wrong. There's just definitely something wrong. And nonetheless, I think we see sort of a difference, largely just because a massive difference between what is like rural versus what is city. I think New Jersey is just more urban, and urban people are just used to dealing with more people, are more used to just being around each other and having to deal with more volume. And maybe only the Philadelphia people of Pennsylvania might deal with stuff like that. It's not even close compared to, you know, New York and that and the New York surrounding area versus Scranton versus Allentown versus Lancaster versus actually Lancaster. Jesus Christ Almighty! Good luck if you live in Lancaster. You're gonna see freaking horses and buggies half the damn time. You think you can keep up with people going 85, 90 in a 65, you know, seven lane highways? Lancaster, you'll have to pull off the road because Jebediah and Ezekiel are coming along with Miriam and Meredith to go deliver butter to their farmhouse. So good luck with that. It's just a completely different way of life. And it makes sense to me looking back at it, but I'm always very, very cognizant. And if anybody is in any sort of position where they're driving between New York and New Jersey and PA, keep an eye on that. Watch those New Jersey drivers. They're not bad. They're pretty good. I won't lie. And I think you going forward, keep an eye out for that. Keep an eye out for that. And you'll notice those New York drivers as well. My only advice is to get out of the damn left lane. You're not the only people driving. I know New Yorkers, how they act. I've been around New Yorkers. I get it. You all think you're the greatest gift to mankind. And admittedly, New York's an amazing place, but the people, right? It's like that old thing about France. God put everything in France except good people, right? Sorry, French. Nonetheless, I have one more story before I go. I was driving recently, and I was coming back from Clifton after meeting some friends, and it was late at night, and I took a wrong damn turn in New Jersey, and I ended up in Broad Street, Newark, and I had never been in Newark before, but needless to say, I wasn't very happy about being on Broad Street in Newark because I was looking to get back down to around the Livingston area, and I was trying to get on 280 to connect on the 80 and stuff like that. Nonetheless, my only advice is that my only other point I wanted to make is that luckily after doing a U-turn on Broad Street in Newark, which was also like 10 o'clock, and I mean, let's be honest, I'm like the one white guy driving around Newark at 10 p.m., right? Just not the best look, right? So I do a U-turn, and finally, there it is, 280 straight ahead. I just wanted to put this out there because as much as we're talking about driving, I also will give New Jersey credit. As much as the flack it gets, New Jersey Transportation, DMV, I guess the Department of Transportation, does very good signs. Their signs are very good, admittedly. So I'll also give New Jersey credit there. Pennsylvania signs are pretty good, and I won't lie. I mean, you can. Some people rely so much on GPS nowadays, and I think that's so bad. It's such a bad thing to do is rely on GPS. For me, it's always about knowing where you're going, knowing the directions, and then the GPS is the backup. But my GPS didn't turn on. Well, no, it did turn on, but it wouldn't connect to the satellite. So here I am driving around like Newark at 10 o'clock at night on a 10 o'clock on Friday night, just trying to find my way back to 280. Eventually I did because bam, there it is. New Jersey DMV, New Jersey DOT, Department of Transportation, comes through, 280 straight ahead. Thank you, New Jersey Dot. Wanted to put that out there. You saved me from being more scared than I already was because I didn't know where the hell I was, and I was in a state that I'm not that familiar with, a very late time at night in an area that was very, very, very unfamiliar to me. So thank you. New Jersey gets 2 check marks for this intro. Check mark for the best drivers and check mark for the best transportation dot, signals, signs, whatever you want to call it. Transportation communication. Good signs. Thank you, New Jersey. There we go. Let's take a break. We'll come on back for the second part of the podcast. Come on back for the body part. Then we're going to talk a little bit about Christianity, talk a little bit about religion, and we'll take it from there. We'll talk to everybody soon. And we're back for part 2 of this episode. The gimmick for the second part of this episode is religion, particularly Christianity and Catholicism. They say you're not supposed to talk about 3 things on a first date, if anybody even does dates anymore. Anyway, 3 things: religion, politics, and I'm not, what's the third one? Maybe religion, politics, and I thought there was 3. Anyway, well, I know 2 of them. I know 2 that you're not supposed to talk to, religion and politics. But nonetheless, we're going to talk about religion on this day. I'm not really interested in making this polemical. I'm not interested at all in evangelizing anybody. But nonetheless, you're supposed to talk about what you know, and I know this pretty well. So that's why I'm talking about it. I have grown up as Catholic for a very, very long time. I've been probably a believer for, I don't know, I'd probably say it was around my end of my junior year going into my senior year of high school was when I started to really take religion seriously. So it's been an interesting road for me so far. Here's some things I would like to say right off the bat. I am not a very good Catholic, not by any stretch of the imagination. There's a really great Stephen Colbert bit where he's arguing with Bill Mayer. Bill Mayer is obviously a devout atheist. He's sort of, that's his shtick, right? His shtick is to just sort of bash. He's just one of those like atheist kind of people who likes to argue and likes to sort of say whatever you believe is false, no matter what it might be. But that's just him. So he's on Stephen Colbert, and at one point he sort of calls out Stephen Colbert for sort of believing in this thing that is so old or so antiquated, and why, and what has he done? And Stephen Colbert says, "Well, I remember I said I'm Catholic. I never said I was a good Catholic, right? It's really sort of an unspoken thing that if you are a Christian, or I would say I know more about Catholicism than I knew about Christianity, even though they're intertwined, but." Needless to say, that there's a massive difference, and I will clear that up right off the bat, that there is a massive difference between Christianity and Catholicism, that Christianity just pretty much means that you believe, well, I'd even say maybe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, but even then I'd be skeptical considering that under the same banner of Christianity, Mormonism and Catholicism are, again, under that same banner. And oddly, that's incredible to think, because Mormons pretty much believe that somewhere along the line, Prophet John Smith put on these glasses that allowed him to read this alternate biblical text, which told him that he was sort of this new age prophet and that he should lead a new series of people, which, at least for me, I'd have to just argue on the fact that there's not any more prophets, there's no more prophets, there's no need to have prophets, because what do prophets do except tell us about what the prophecy is going to come? Well, for Catholics, Jesus is that prophecy. He fulfilled it. It's over. You know what I mean? There's nothing else left to predict, right? It's all good. Even the only thing left is really the end of the world, and Jesus in the scripture says that. Even I don't know that. So the Son of God doesn't know when the world's going to end. Only God does, and damn sure none of these prophets or these so-called prophets on earth are going to figure that out anyway. Needless to say, I'm not going back to it. I'm not a very good Catholic. I like to think that I do every day when I wake up that I just try to make the world a better place, and I try to embody the basic values of Jesus's teachings and stuff like that. But nonetheless, it's certainly difficult to be it. It's not, in my opinion, easy at all in today's society to be religious. In some ways, it's counterintuitive to today's society, because especially, I mean, I'm in my mid-20s now. My generation, these millennials, these damn millennials, are really based around freedom. I mean, you just look at how much like the LGBT community and stuff like that is based around not being tied down to anything. And what does religion do except tell you that you can do things, right? It is a set of rules, it is discipline, it is order, it is structure. And so many millennials and young people, I would argue, just wake up just hating rules. And I think, that's up to them. I think probably as they get older, they'll change a little bit, but some of them might not. But it's certainly a contentious relationship. I'll give some examples that just make it seem different. Like, that like we have to fast and stuff like that, which I know nobody likes. That, there are certain rules about going to mass, which I know nobody likes in that sense. I know just things like abortion, which is a massive contestable thing to think about in today's society. There are these many different ways. I'll tell you one that I'll go to show you that it's in some ways difficult, but also self-fulfilling and gratifying in a way that for a long time I would have never cohabitated, which is a Catholic doctrine that you can't live together. Great word, Catholics. Very, 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 very long line of very smart people, which I always really enjoy. If you ever get a chance, you read Augustine's Pear Tree analogy. It's really, really, really good. That you simply can't live together. Now they do it on grounds of because Catholics believe in chastity, which is that you shouldn't be engaging in sexual relationships outside of marriage. And basically, from what my reading of the catechism is, now then again, I'm not a catechistic or catechismist or an apologist in any way. I like my church and I like my religion and it makes sense to me and I firmly believe in it, but nonetheless, I'm at no point going to deny that I have my own brain and I have my own doubts and I have my own feelings and I have my own, I have every single, I guess what I would say, experience of the rational world coming in that makes me question it. I have a very contentious relationship with the church and a very, more importantly, a contentious relationship with God himself. I'll get to that later when we get back. Cohabitation is you're not supposed to do it because it would lead to, in a very sort of smart way, an increased pressure, but more of a natural pathway to sex before marriage, pretty much. I mean, does it make sense? Yes. Again, people, I always people always criticize the church, but nonetheless, that's a solid argument. You might not like the argument, right? And I think it goes to show you who I am. I'm someone who likes to argue. I'm someone who is always watching what is being argued and what evidence is coming up and what the points are and what the claims are. It's a very solid argument, right? You live with someone that, you are in a relationship with based upon love and intimacy and emotional support. Well, what is more closer? What is the highest pinnacle of love but sexual union, right? I could tell my background by the term I use sexual union. Good luck. If you want to steal it, go ahead. But then again, I didn't get it. The church uses that. So the church is also pretty good at describing it. I mean, let's be honest, the church really kind of comes down to it, and that really comes down to it that it's like, are you married? Yeah, okay, then I don't care what the hell you do. Do it, go wild, buy swings, buy whatever toys you want to buy, get whatever people, not get whatever people, no, not that. Hold on, there's get the two people on the certificate, but whatever you two crazy kids do, I don't care what you want to buy, what you want, I can't even say what you want to watch either because they are against pornography, but whatever you want to do to each other, in some ways, church is like just have at it, right? Unfortunately, that's not always the best way. You shouldn't be, you shouldn't take something as serious as sexual union and obviously procreation, right? Considering that That's what, you know, that's obviously the one of the, actually the main reason why we do it, right? That in such frivolous terms with just anybody. But, and that's kind of what the church says, and it's always hilarious to me because how much I sort of believe stuff, but then as I get older, I think I'm just not sure. You know, would I live with my future fiance? Hell yes, I would. Are you joking? Considering that, at least for me, I'm only saying yes once. If it's, I can feel like my intestine just crawling like into my ass right now because of the thought of like getting divorced. Like, oh Christ Almighty, what a horrific adventure that must be. And again, not for any, I mean, some people obviously have gone through it, but just the thought of it, like, I just hope that, God forbid, that ever happens to me, or God forbid it really happens to anybody. But nonetheless, you know, I'm only saying yes once, and if that yes is going to be, I'm going to make damn sure that yes is serious. That's going to be a serious yes, but it's also going to be a calculated yes. That is not going to be a, I might as well, or yeah, sure, or you know what, sure, or yep. That's going to be a yes, a definitive yes. And with that being said, it's you have to. I think it's weird. But what I guess my point is, what I'm trying to say is that notice that I'm someone who practices, and I consider myself just as part of the church and as part of any other part of the body of Catholicism. And that's what I believe. And I think my opinions and my beliefs are probably a part of a very common sentiment that's coming through with the new churchgoers, right? The new millennials that are sort of saying, I do believe the church adds something to my life. And I'll get to, I think, the point that I want to get to, that what I think it ultimately adds, it might be my sort of slant. I'm not going to lie, I will have a slant for this point and this thing. I will have my gimmick, right? That's my big gimmick. But it's going to show you that it's not always like a bad thing, but at the same time, it doesn't always have to be bad because doesn't have to be 100% obedience, right? If you're a monk, for example, then you're going to be 100% obedient. If you're a priest, you are. But we all make mistakes. We all are sinners. We, in some ways, I'm reminded of someone who had a background that was like, for every saint has a past, but every sinner has a future, or some completely bullcrap, whatever hipster quote that might have come from, but at least it makes sense, right? Sometimes the best theology is found in the most unlikely places. And as someone who's taken theology courses at universities and has been taught in other places and read a lot and read books and had courses and listened to lectures, theology has to be one of the most botched instructional practices of the past. Of Western civilization. Maybe it was taught better back like in the medieval ages and, you know, the 1800s, but at least in the 20th century, man, talk about a flawed avenue, because everybody gets that fire, either gets like that damn fire and brimstone person, or alternatively, and this might be a contentious part here, or they get the everything's just amazing Christianity, right? Everything, just Jesus just loves you. Jesus is in your Philly cheesesteak. He's in your cheese. He's in your shoes. He's just, when you drink water, he's in there. Yeah, and you know what? That's great. Or you get some level of prosperity teaching, right? Where if you just love Jesus, you'll make a lot of money and stuff like that. And, you know, all that stuff just comes off very, very artificial. It comes off as very glad-handing. It comes off as very, from a rhetorical standpoint, it comes off as just bad evangelization. It comes off as just confirming people's own desires. And really, the problem is that Catholicism will never really tell you what you want. It will tell you that obviously Jesus and the Lord loves you, but at the same time, it's not going to say that your life will be amazing just because you believe in them. I mean, the Lord answers all of our prayers and stuff like that, or at least that's what the belief is. But to say that all my prayers have been answered, you know what, in some ways, I think majority of them have, but to say that they've all been answered, no, absolutely not, you know, and you can't even expect that, right? But I think all in all, most of my prayers have been, and consideringly, I don't know if it's the worst avenue to go down, but I understand that it is still very a contentious way of going about it. I mean, you even look at volunteering, for example, how much that's gone down. But I don't think most people would say volunteering is a bad way to go about it. I think most people would argue that volunteering is really, really good for the soul and it really, really helps. And I know as someone who I've been trying to volunteer more because there's nothing like that guilt you feel when scripture is saying, for example, it's not about what you do or what you, it, not about what you say, but actions speak louder than words, basically. Yeah, and then you can go to mass, and I mean that's only like an hour and stuff like that once every week. That's gonna be a new. I realize if this podcast does take off, I'm gonna have to get shirts made up because that's like what you do now. You just get shirts made up of things like the logo that I drew up on. The logo that you see for this podcast was drawn up by me on Microsoft Paint in had to have been 1 minute 90 seconds. It had to have been, but I did it, and I was like, it's kind of edgy. It's kind of like, it's kind of sh like a little bit like Art Deco-y kind of thing. So I just kept it. But what I was I say was that part of this is you get T-shirts made up and. One of the T-shirts is going to be, and stuff like that. I've recognized that I use phrases like stuff like that. I know I use one to some degree. I think I use that. I use to some degree a lot. With that being said, I use a lot of transition phrases, but I'm trying. I'm trying. So maybe I'll have to get a counter or something that counts how many times I say and stuff like that. This comes from an insecurity of like not having everything finished, but. Good thing is that I can only do so much and we'll go from there. Anyway, I was talking about volunteering, which is I could always recommend that. I would say that to anybody, it's there is a distinct feeling you're probably going to get in your chest where you're like, I'm not doing that or I don't want to do that. And I could say that it's always worth it. It is always worth it no matter what you're doing. Not saying it's going to be fun, right? Some of it might be hard work and I'm not at any moment saying that it's going to be an amazing experience every time. I've done soup kitchen work recently and I've gone twice so far and tend to go probably at least maybe 10 times before the summer begins. I have 2 times here. I'm about 8 or 6 times before the summer begins. And I can say at least the first time I went, it went really, really well. Second time, it went all right. You know what I mean? It was okay. It was all right. It wasn't amazing. But you walk away going, I've done some good today. And there's something to be said about doing good, that there is something going on that you can participate in, and you meet people who are participating, and it does really feel good for the soul. I would close out this part by just saying that we're talking about religion. I think the church obviously has some problems. It's gone through a lot of different things. I'm not really want to talk about like current events and that. I want to just give more insight that I would recommend really anybody, and this would be my argument just going forward. So be aware. The argument I really want to make that is that I recognize that if anybody is trying to become more spiritual and stuff like that, which by the way, I do hate. This will piss a lot of people off, but I know people have a problem with organized religion, but some people will say things like, I think there's a Daniel Tosh bit where he says like, "Oh, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual," and then insert punchline here, but I don't remember. But if anybody does say that, it's hard for me to buy it. I won't lie. Maybe I know. Maybe I've been just been indoctrinated, brother. But I probably am. But I guess maybe it's okay to be curious. I don't really know how you're spiritual. I don't really know what that means. Maybe, I guess if anything, that just believes that you do believe that there is something going on, but you just don't know. I would rather you just say you're agnostic and you're still trying to figure it out. I would just recommend anybody just to be on their spiritual journey and recognize that they're on it instead of just going through. But here's my point. I do recognize that it's difficult to be in a position where you don't necessarily know what is happening. But I think a larger problem is that just the world operates contrary to religion. Religion really at its core is based upon let's use the word, religion is really based upon dualism. And what I mean by that is, philosophic term alert 101, right? Dualism, I'm sorry if anybody's listening and just hates these terms, but I'm chucking them out there. Hang in with me. And if you hear that bang in the background, that's the Sharpie that I'm holding, and I'm vigorously jabbing at the air with when you hear that. So that's me making my point. That the world is based upon not dualism anymore, that there's nothing beyond, that if dualism is the belief that there's something that goes beyond simply the material, that what everywhere around us, we are filled with matter. We are filled with a desk and lights and lamps and TVs and, you know, Diet Coke and computers and all that. But to say that there's something beyond that, that there is in material things, doesn't exist. That would be anti-dualism. That would be materialism. Dualism believes that there are things beyond the material, like the soul, like spirit, like things like that. And I think most people are willing to try and believe in dualism, but they don't really want to go any farther from it and start adding structure to it. Like, people will go, I guess, I think about those Ghostbuster shows or those Cracker Jack people on trying to find ghosts by going in on houses and stuff like that. But they say things like, those people who are watching that are truly trying to figure out if there is something beyond, if there is another realm of existence that is not just the physical, I can touch it, see it, observe it, thing with my eyes and my senses. So the world really does operate like that nowadays, and it's hard to even find that. It's hard to find anybody who's, it's hard to find that. I think the common sentiment is that there is nothing else, right? It's just what we see is what we get. If I can't see it and you can't prove it, then what else? And it's really hard. I recognize that that's difficult. And even I sometimes, even as someone who has a very, I would say, close relationship with God, sometimes I have tons of doubt myself. There's times where I do wake up and I'm just like, I have no idea what the hell is going on up there, but it doesn't feel right. There's really a line between dualism and materialism. That sometimes a part of it is there a creator? Is there not a creator? Are we from a specific source? Are we just derived naturally? And this is where like science comes in, right? With like evolution or the Big Bang theories and stuff like that. Not to show the Big Bang theory, though. And I think what I would sort of leave everybody on, or I would try to argue, is that I would argue, is there any more magic in the world, in the universe? Is there anything beyond what we are? Because one of the qualities about me, and I, people have told me this, is that because of my faith, but also simply because of my idealism, that there is an unmistakable attraction to people who have ideals. Because at its core, materialism is based upon the senses of what we can see, what we can smell, what we can taste, what we can feel, and so on. But if you live in a world that is completely, and your viewpoint is based completely on materialism, say, for example, if you're a scientist, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but just saying, it tends to become rough after a while. It really does. You start questioning, like, what do you have going on? What else is there? So is everything just simply traceable and definable based upon scientific discoveries? And that is love nothing more than chemicals in our brains? Is sadness nothing more than a chemical? Is how we react nothing more than psychological principles to one another? Is to think that friendship is nothing more than a connection based upon values and things like that, and things like that, there we go, things like that alert, there it is. To sort of go through life like that, I think would have to be very, very tough, and to be very, 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 I guess my word is just would just be very unmagical. And to think that there's nothing, there's something else not going on in this world is difficult. I know the counter argument is obviously, well, that's the truth, right? You can't, I know that might not be what we want. It might be a very desolate way of viewing the world, but I can't believe in something that I just don't think is true, that there's no discernible proof for. And I think if anything, I'm not going to go into it, but I think if anything, someone thinking that should go and look at true sort of Christian apologists. That's not that they're apologizing. That's because of that's the term that they used for defending the church or any sort of religion. That I think most people would argue, and that the dividing philosophic line now between dualism, materialism, between believing in God and not believing in God, basically is up to Kierkegaard's leap of faith. I think there's just as much philosophic theories providing evidence for God, just as much as there's philosophic evidence providing that there's not a God, that the burden of proof doesn't really rely on anything, that you have years upon years of centuries, really, of religious thought and arguments, but at the end of the day, who does the burden of proof rely on? Science says we haven't really found anything. Religion says you're not going to find it, or you're looking in the wrong place, or that's not the mode you're going at. It won't lead you. You're expecting different answers, but to be religious, you need to expect other kinds of answers than the one you want. I think it at the end of the day, I understand that it's difficult to go based upon, but my argument would be, is there magic in this world? And I'm not talking about Siegfried and Roy. I'll revisit my question. Is there magic in this world? Is there magic in your life? Is there things that exist that just because they do, and we really can't put a thing on them? I think we all kind of believe in them. Part of them are just ideas, right? Ideas of integrity, ideas of trustworthiness, for example, justice. Let's think of another one. How about the ideal of authenticity, right? These are sometimes traits, they sort of are attributes, but really you take a one like justice is an ideal. It is an idea, right? Idea, coming the word ideal, that people believe in, but really don't have any sort of certifiable proof or real world evidence to prove that it exists or proves that we should uphold it. Just that it's sort of an intuition, a feeling of going forward. To say that when I asked the question, is there any magic left in the universe, is that when you sort of believe in God and you believe in any sort of religion, you are recognizing that there is a magic in the universe. And that's not to gimmick it either and say that God is magic, but to say that there's something that I can't explain and there's something going on that I don't necessarily know, and there is a instinct of the human ego that will fight against that. So you can at the same time be egotistical but also believe and accept that there are things beyond your control. However, I do believe that giving up control and acknowledging that you're not in control is also very contrary and contentious to 2017 general thought. Is there magic still in the universe, and do you believe in it? Would your life be better if you consider that there might be something more? And notice, I'm not really trying to convince you for my religion. I really don't care what religion you follow at all. But more importantly, what I would sort of put out there is that I think anytime we have people believing that there's other things going on, or at least considering that there might be, you already do it. You probably already believe that you should be a nice person. Well, why do you believe that in the first place? Why? Well, it's just an ideal that I believe in. Well, an ideal can be just as is from the same philosophic cloth and thought as religion. It's just more complex. It's more developed. It's based upon different grounds. Overall, I'll repeat it again. Is there magic anymore in the universe? And if there is that magic, could your life be improved if you embraced it as opposed to repressing it and sort of ignoring it? Some people talk about a relationship with God, and you absolutely can find one if you try at it. It's a process like anything else is. More importantly, if there's no more magic in the universe, like you argued, I'd like to just question, well, what really left is there to do? You know, is nothing really mean anything? If you're not believing that there is something beyond, then how do you believe, for example, in morality or something like that? I know that's a really rough argument to think that if you're not religious, you can't be moral. I'm not getting into that argument. That's a really, really rough, bad argument from a perspective. But I think I'd sort of go back to my old one, my original question. I just keep repeating, any more magic in the universe? Because I think one of the best ways, and I'm going to end the podcast on this, and I'll end this probably very dry drag through Christianity, religion, and Catholicism, and I apologize, but I would end it by this, and I was listening to a podcast once of a guy who was a Ouija board expert, and you think you might have a weird job, but he was a Ouija board expert. He was basically a historian, and that's what he focused on. He focused on the Ouija board. He focused it on as a cultural object, as an object of play, and what it was. When the podcast host asked him if he believed that the Ouija board contacted demons or contacted spirits, the expert said no, pretty much. He did not believe. He believed that the Ouija board does give answers, but that most people want to believe that the answers come from something of another realm, of another dimension or reality, something supernatural or something like that. Something like that alert, there we go. But he largely said that he believes it's just your own psychology coming out, your own subconscious, for example, coming out when you use it. The reason why I bring him up is because at one point they asked him if he was a believer at all. And he just said it. He put it in a really good way. And this is how I'll end it. He said that when you say that you're going to follow a religion, any religion it might be, you are getting on and buying a ticket for the crazy train. And if I had an Ozzy Osbourne sample right here, I'd play Ozzy. Jesus. If I had an Ozzy Osbourne sample, I would play it right here of, you know, and the guitar. He said that when you buy the ticket, you get on the crazy train. When you say you're going to believe in religion, you get on the crazy train. And he said, in one of the best ways he put it, he said, and here's the thing. I'm not saying the crazy train's bad. He said, when you're on the crazy train, you can meet amazing people. You can have amazing experiences. You can have amazing situations, and you can gain amazing thought, and you can gain amazing closure, and gain insane amounts of incredible knowledge about you and the world around you. But at no point can you forget that you're on the crazy train. At no point can you stop and can you say, well, I'm not on the crazy train anymore. This is all coming because it's natural. And he said, you're on the crazy train. And at the end of the day, you should acknowledge that you're on it. And I will say that for a very, very long time, I wasn't on the crazy train. And my life was okay. And then I got on the crazy train, and my life has been infinitely better. And that was the path that I've learned and I've decided and that ultimately made my life much more magical and ultimately made my life better. My question to you would be, once again, is there any magic in the universe? And if you say so, I'd ask you, maybe in your opinion, is it time to buy a ticket to get on the crazy train? You can meet some great people, but then again, you got to go on. You got to get on. You can go through some amazing experiences, but you have to get on the crazy train. I'll ask again, in the final word, maybe should you buy a ticket? Answer's up to you. My name has been Robert Kaler. It's late. It's late on a Monday. This episode took two days to record. Nonetheless, I thank you all for listening to the Average Gods Podcast Part 3. I will catch you all in Episode 4. It's been great. If you would like to support the show, I have an email set up. You can contact me at Robert. Yeah. I wish you can contact me in my own freaking email. Come on, Robert. You can contact the show at averagegodspodcast@gmail.com. And if you're feeling particularly adventurous and particularly communicative, you can also leave a review on iTunes. The podcast is also on iTunes. AverageGodsPodcast@gmail.com for any sort of communication based. You can send in questions or anything if you want to interact with the show. And the best way to support it is obviously to leave a review on iTunes, which it's up there. Again, thank you for listening to Episode 3. Are you getting on that crazy train? I hope I convinced you, or I hope I at least made you consider it's time to start looking at that train schedule. Thank you all. Have a good night, and I'll see you all on Episode 4. Bye. They say you're not supposed to talk about religion.